My name is Donald Davis. I was born in King's Road in Llandybiam on the 5th of the 4th, 1932. I went to school in the Infant School, which is the oldest school in Llandybiam. And then when I became old enough, I went to the Central School and stayed there until I was 14 years of age. I don't remember really of the actual starting of the war, but we lived in King's Road, and after a number of years of the war, Swansea was being bombed by the Germans, and we could we could see from our home in King's Road in the glow of the oil works in Llandarcy, which was well alight at that time, and the south part of it, where we could hear the bombings of Swansea itself, and the sounds then of the Heinkel bombers, which had a humming noise. And it was like this, which sounded like as if they were driven by diesel engines. I'm not quite sure whether they were diesel or petrol. I'm not quite sure. But Swansea was really well alight. And as far as we were concerned in King's Road, we could very well have been able to read a newspaper because of the light the Llandarcy oil works gave off being well alight. The work itself in Swansea, later on after the bombings, we went down to Swansea, and we could see all the rubble which was strewn everywhere, and where I think bulldozers must have been going along to clear a way through the rubble. And that was, to us, it was just being, well, only about 12 years of age then. But during that time, it was an exciting outing, basically. But on the we weren't old enough to realize what really was going on. During the war, as far as my father was friendly with a gentleman called Mr. Harold Lee, who lived in Llandeilo Road in Llandybiam. And he had to go to Morrison Hospital to get medical attention. And next to him in bed was a German, either a pilot or a member of an air crew or what he was, I'm not quite sure. But he must have been able to speak English, because Harold Lee asked him, how did he manage to bomb Swansea so accurately? And he said that it was comparatively easy for them. All they had to do was to fly over Llandybiam, and there is, there was during that time a furnace in the lime firms in Llandybiam, and that was well alight at night, and it had the glow you could see for miles, not only from up, but even in the village it was quite alight. And so what the gentleman in the hospital said to Harold Lee was that they flew over Llandybiam, found that furnace well alight, and on a nice clear evening, or he was able to pick out the railway lines that he knew about, possibly leading towards Swansea. All they had to do was to follow the sheen on the railway tracks themselves, the lines, and follow it all the way down to Swansea, and then they bombed the city itself. And then I remember them seemed to be coming back the same way, and then turning as they got to Londonderry, they seemed to be turning towards Carmarthen over a place called Broad Oak. And we were told later on that the air crew must have either had too many bombs left, so they let go five bombs over towards the Broad Oak area. I've never heard anything of that, whether that was true or not, but I've never heard any stories from that day to this regarding the bombs creating any damage or anything over towards Broad Oak. Now, during the time that Mr. Lee was in hospital, he obviously gathered all this information, and when he returned home, he reported the whole matter to the police. And within a couple of weeks after, the whole furnace was covered over with a big steel canopy, like the head of a mushroom, which hit the whole glow of the furnace itself. So that was well done, Mr. Lee. As was expected, the traffic on the railway line during the war was quite heavily occupied by trains going up and down the line, and we as children, we were quite interested in the tanks and armaments that were going up, but I never saw them coming down again towards Shrewsbury and or Llandilo and Shrewsbury area. But then later on, quite often, these American soldiers were being transported past the railway station in Llandybyr. So being children, we were quite interested in American chewing gum. So we all, as boys together, we all stood on the railway gates and shouted, "Any gum, chap?" And we could see, as the train went by, the packets of chewing gum, Wrigley's chewing gum, was being thrown out. So as soon as the train passed, we were like little rabbits running around the place looking for the bits of packets of chewing gum. And that was the start of basically us thinking of the American soldiers being in the area. Now, from time to time then, in the village, there was a dance in the memorial hall, and the American soldiers seemed to be invited there, and quite nicely, and we could see them enjoying at one time, until there was a fight on the square with some of the locals, and obviously it was a sad affair to see everybody fighting on the square near the church. And this gentleman had been to the chip shop, above all things. He had all, must have been fish and chips. And as he came from the fish and chip shop, could see this fight. And with about, well, it must have been 8 to 10 people fighting on the square. He got entangled with the fight, and as far as the chips were concerned, they were all strewn all over the floor, right across. And that was sad to me, because, you know, they were coming to help us, and you get a few people that were after a couple of pints of beer. Everybody seemed to be the enemy, and they didn't realize it, but this is what happened. And unfortunately then, after a couple of weeks, my parents invited a couple of American soldiers into Sunnyhurst in King's Road. My mother was quite a lovely lady, really, although I say it myself. During the war then, she always said, I'll have to be kind to people, to soldiers, because when my boys might have to go to the war, I hope somebody will look after them. And unknowns to her, this is what happened. And there were Italian prisoners in Landerbier. Germans were in, I think, Llandarog. And we had an Italian prisoner in Gambica Farm. His name was Luigi Fontana. And the police, one night, on Saturday evening, came to see my parents, and being Catholics, asked us to take Luigi to the Catholic Church in Ammanford and escort him there and escort him back to our house. And then he was returned then to the farm in Gambica. And of course, he was a very smart ex-policeman. Prior to going to the being called up in the army, he was a very smart person. He became a prisoner in Tunis, and his friend, who was another prisoner in Llandybie, his name was Ernesto Marseille. He was a tank commander, a sergeant, and they both used to come and stay in our house and just have a cup of tea and somewhere to go. And my mother was quite entertaining, as well as the we were all a family together, basically. And one night, on a Friday night, just before Christmas, we used to call Ernesto Marseille Dino. That seemed to be his nickname. And on this Friday night, there was a knock on the back door, and my mother went to open the door, and Dino was there with a big brown paper bag, and he said, "Present, Mama, present." And when she looked into the bag, there must have been about 40 or 50 sparrows there, dead sparrows. Now, my mother said, "Take them back, you cruel thing. I don't want them. Take them back." And the object of him bringing the sparrows to my mother's house was that, being Christmas time in Italy, they set bird cages in the Alps to sing, they started singing, and then unfortunately other birds came along, and bang, 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 that's how they trapped them. And so then they garnish the turkey with sparrow little bodies, basically. But that's. But my mother was quite shocked, and do you know how to take the bird? What you did with the sparrows, we'll never know, because ever since he went back to Italy and he went to Australia, but I still pray for him every night. I pray for them all. Another day in Dino, Ernesto Massey was coming up the road, and we were all out on the front, and he was so excited coming towards my mother's home and our home that he had this letter in his hand. And he said, "Look, look, Maria, letter from Maria. Look, look." And he knew very well that we couldn't understand what was written on the letter, because it was all in Italian. He said, "Look, Mama, feel it." He said, "So feel the paper, feel the letter." And he was so excited. And later on, after his return, all Italians, they went back. So my parents and myself went to Milan to visit Dino and his wife Maria. They had a son called Gianfranco. Now, that unfortunately was the last time I saw him. And he went back to, as I've already said, he went back to, emigrated, I think, to Australia. And I think he died there. And I have tried to trace Gianfranco. They lived in Via Pisano Moderno in Milan. But I haven't had any joy getting hold of them at all. But another prisoner was Guido Bonato. I went to Padua with my parents, and we traced him through our friend Luigi Fontana. He took us there to meet Guido Bonato. His wife, he was quite a good-looking man and very reserved. And he introduced us to his wife, and she was working in a spa center. We said hello and goodbye, and that was the last time I saw Guido Bonato and his wife. And they, as I've said, they lived in Verona. We heard on the radio that the war was over, and my mother immediately asked Dennis, my brother, my twin brother, and myself to run down the village. "Quick, quick, quick," she said. "Go to the vicarage and ask the vicar to ring the church bell and tell him to ring it straight away, because the war is over." And so we went down, and I can see the vicar now. He was a big, very big man. His name was Mr. Davis, Vicar Davis. And by the time we got home, the bells were ringing, that I think was the first time they were rung after the war. Because during the war, the bells were not allowed to chime at all. So everybody started to have the party sort of atmosphere. And there was street parties, and everybody seemed to be so happy. But sadly, the war in Japan hadn't ended during that time. So then, of course, then became, I think, VJ Day, Victory in Japan, later on. I'm proud to say that I'm still in contact with the Fontana family. Fontana being the Italian prisoner, I'm quite proud to say that I'm still in contact with his wife. Her name is Irene. She is now 96 years old. She has a daughter, Elsa. When we first came out of the army, my parents and I went to Italy. Elsa was only about 5 then. And then she had, Irene had a daughter, another daughter called Elda, a son called Flavio, and now they're all married and they live in the Vicenza area in Italy, in a village called Marlo. Each and every day, week, every Sunday, I speak to them on WhatsApp. And we have a long chat, and it's so nice to be able to see them all